Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles. I am your host, Ross Bolin, here as always with Mr. Barrett Dudley in the year 2022.
22.
This is our first episode in 2022.
2022, new me, new you. I'm spitting.
Oh, don't do bars to start the new year.
Don't
Barrett.
Make me drop bars on you, Ross.
Barrett bars. Many new shows and movies to discuss, but the first thing I wanted to hit on.
Shit.
Is that there's a new Matrix movie out.
Yeah.
Matrix Revolutions.
Heard of it.
As it were.
Came out a few weeks ago now, right? 2 weeks ago, maybe. Two weeks, give or take.
When you and I were in
It's one of these ones it's a Warner property. So It went straight to, it was day and date, theater, and HBO Max.
Right.
So
and then they remove it from HBO Max.
They'll remove it eventually. From HBO Max after a month. It gets a month on HBO Max, and then depending on the film, sometimes it comes back in like a few months. Sometimes it does not. Eventually, all the movies that did this should live there. But for something like, let's say, Dune, I've got no idea when they'll put Dune back on there because now they're getting their rental money, and that's smart too.
Gotta get the rental money.
It's aggravating because I want to watch Dune again,
yeah.
but it's smart.
I've noticed them do this with like certain properties around certain holidays. Like if they're like, oh, everybody watches The Godfather on Thanksgiving or some weird shit, then they like have it strategically planned to where, oh, coincidentally, you have to pay $3.99 to watch Home Alone 2 this Christmas.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they've got another, you know, $40 million or whatever in revenue.
Sure, sure.
The Matrix, obviously, the original came out, what, when you and I were...
Well, so let me...
It was 1999.
Yeah, so I was going to... You just blew up my spot there. But,
sorry.
I was going to ask you, when did you rewatch this? The headline here
that we both watched The Matrix recently.
Is that we both just happened to go back and rewatch Matrix.
So when the Revolutions hype began to really build...
Uh-huh.
I guess like 3 weeks ago, I started thinking about the original Matrix. I was like, man, I haven't watched this movie in 15 years, you know? It's been a really long time. And it was one of the biggest films of you and I's lifetime
so far. Yeah.
Came out in 99.
So have you watched the new one yet?
No, me either.
Okay.
And so I've got a reason for that too.
We're not going to discuss that today. But
because I can't even remember the one before this new one.
Well, the 2 and 3.
I know, too. I have no idea what happened.
Revolution
in 3.
And then Resurrection? No. The new one is Resurrection.
I thought the new one was Revolutions. Revolutions is 2003.
There's Revolutions. Then there's... What's the third one called?
The new one is Resurrection.
Resurrections.
Resurrections.
Resurrections. But what
Multiple.
Was number... So what was number 3 called?
I don't know. Nobody does.
Nobody knows.
It's been lost to time.
Yeah.
I'm looking it up right now. Let's see. The Matrix was the first one.
Yeah.
The Matrix Reloaded.
Reloaded was
the second one. The Matrix Revolutions.
Reloaded and Revolutions.
And then the fourth is Resurrections, which we are stuck with now. And then I've heard that the next one, the fifth one, is going to involve... I was going to make a boner joke.
Reanimations?
No. What's it called? Erections. Matrix Erections.
Ah,
that's the next one.
Yeah, but that wouldn't fit with the R word.
You don't need an R.
No.
No. Just
how about just sex. Apostrophe Erections.
Yeah. Question. Did you know?
Yeah.
Like, do you know who made the original Matrix?
Of course.
The Wachowskis.
The Wachowski brothers, who are now the Wachowski
sisters. Yeah, trans sisters. Lena and Lily Wachowski.
Yeah.
Two of the more, I would say, just in terms of... the way they operate, we don't know very much about the Wachowskis, considering they made the fucking Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, I mean, I guess we do know quite a bit about their personal lives, considering the transition information, but these are not like, you know, when I think of the biggest filmmakers in America, the Wachowski sisters, they don't really roll the way that Hollywood does with all of the red carpet stuff all of the
correct.
Time.
Correct. And you can dive into their oeuvre a little bit and see that, and a lot of it will make sense based on The Matrix as well, but like it's some kind of freaky deaky shit. They pick this weird kind of sci-fi lane a lot of the time, and it doesn't always work out as well as The Matrix
right
happened
right.
to which I think is also kind of clear when you compare The Matrix to Revolutions and Resurrections.
Because they weren't involved in all of them, right? Like,
I think that they were involved in at least the second and the third one. Are they not involved in the new one?
Okay, it says, Lily directed, wrote, and executive produced several episodes of Showtime, blah, blah, blah. Oh, Lena filmed The Matrix Resurrections, written with Mitchell and Alexander Amon. So it sounds like Lena is the only one involved with this most recent work.
Well, my point was that they have not always made things that have been as commercially or as critically successful as The Matrix.
Yeah, the
was.
Other thing they were most known for in my mind is V for Vendetta, which is another one of my favorite movies that I've watched many times.
That one's very well received. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, there was like, it's another one of those situations where when the creators years later come out and say that their original work was either a parable for or a metaphor for something else. Mm-hmm. And then there's all these, everybody freaks out. It's like, J.K. Rowling fucking loves doing this.
Yes.
Should just be like, and Dumbledore was gay.
They did that with V?
No, they did that with The Matrix, saying it was a metaphor for transitioning. That the entire film was inspired by their journey there. So all these Matrix fans who are, homophobes, were very upset by that. It's just been this wild controversy around the Wachowskis, which I honestly had not thought about them in many years, and was just kind of amazed about their whole story is wild. The fact that we're still getting Matrix movies 22 years later is wild. That fucking Keanu Reeves is still out there getting it, and he's aged very well.
Very well.
When I watched Matrix 1, I was like, okay, so he's aged 5 years since this, like in 22 years.
And he does look young in this film, but he's aged very gracefully, yeah.
He's also experienced the Keanu Reeves Renaissance? What do they call it? The Keanu-sance?
Keanu-sance? Sure, that works.
Since the last Matrix movie came out, so it's kind of this different lane for the whole franchise. But so to go back to where the original movie in 1999, and when it came out, and if you weren't alive, it was like, there's only been maybe 10 movies in my lifetime with that level of hype when they dropped, right? Like, this movie changed the landscape of movie making or whatever, like took sci-fi to a totally different level.
Yeah, and what was interesting about The Matrix specifically was that it wasn't necessarily supposed to do that. Like, it got released and it wasn't this, like, from my recollection, this was not some super, like, pre-hyped bombshell, massive budget, like this movie's going to slaughter the box office and like set a whole new precedent for sci-fi. It was like a sleeper. You know, it's like
a little bit. I mean,
and then it became this massive, 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 massive movie, which spawned two and now three sequels and like laid the foundation for like many movies that would succeed it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had a bunch of thoughts rewatching this, and you know, I've probably seen this movie 10 times, but this was the first time for me in several years, and one of the reasons why I was going back to watch it was because Laura had never seen it, and this was one of those things where it's like, after you watch this movie, your brain will be opened to so... We got in the podcast, and like somebody was making a Matrix reference on a podcast. Did I just say we got in the podcast?
A red pill?
We got in the car...
Reference?
After watching this film and like a podcast that was on,
immediately
made a Matrix reference. And it's like, it's the same type of thing that happened after she saw Dumb and Dumber for the first time, like 18 months ago. And was like, oh my, like looking over at me like, oh my God, you quote this movie 4 times a day.
Yeah. This is your personality.
And I, so it's like, you know, that's kind of what one of the reasons why I wanted to go back and watch it. First thought, here's my first thought. I've been, you know, we're doing a full watch of The Sopranos over on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles.
True.
And one of the things that we've been talking about is as we're watching that and now into the later seasons is like, now it's like tripping me out because I think about The Sopranos as this older show. I think about it as being 20 years old.
Right.
And we're into the seasons where it's not quite 20 years old, but I really couch it in that late 90s or 2000-2001 kind of vibe and place.
Right.
And so now it's surprising to me as we're going on that like other stuff was happening concurrently. So like in this most recent season, I put in the landmark that like we are now 2 years post Zoolander. in this season.
Or in 2004.
Or that Curb Your Enthusiasm is on its like third season during this season.
Getting referenced in The Sopranos.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's all this weird stuff that's like not totally aligning for me. So watching The Matrix, I of course had to compare it to The Sopranos. And it's also weird because like if you told me that The Matrix came out before any of The Sopranos had even aired, I would have been like, nah, you lying.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I can't even do time frame for like. Yeah. 1999 is what I was.
We were 13.
13 years old, bro. Yeah. Like that's 12, right before 12, high 13. School. I mean, it was end of middle school, and it just, like you said. I mean, I think for me being that young, I definitely wasn't plugged into pop culture the way I am now. So the hype leading up to it is less. I can't recall
right
how big
right.
of a how much they marketed it, but I do know. That originally, I mean, it exploded quickly once it exploded.
Yes, it did, yeah.
And then it was more that it was, for us as kids, it was like, this is an action movie that the action and special effects are going to change Hollywood forever, right? Like, yeah. That was the sell. It wasn't like, this has so much societal commentary on, like, being woke versus not woke, or trans versus not trans. It was just like, watch Keanu Reeves kick ass and kill hundreds of people. Like that was sort of, and then it became, dude, there was negativity. I don't know if you remember this, but Columbine happened,
yeah.
And they swept the Matrix up into the conversation with Eminem and Marilyn Manson and all the Grand Theft Auto. And it was one of the main films that people pointed the finger at and said, this is a problem and it's causing bad things.
They walked into the school with long
trench
coats and like
Neo style.
And duffel bags full of their
And there's,
their
of course,
weapons.
The
yeah.
scene in The Matrix where he walks into the agent's main tower thingy to attack them and goes through the metal detector and hilariously has like 400 guns in his trench coat and his duffel bags as well, and then he shoots everyone in the world.
Yeah, it's funny because you watch that scene, which is obviously a super famous scene, and it's now been parodied so much or replicated so much or referenced so many times that it now actually feels kind of like a parody of itself when you go back and rewatch it, because it is really silly. And you know, as
they really lean into it
as ahead of special effects as they were in 1999 with all like the super slow-mo and the and all the glass shattering. You know, we can all remember the Korn
the slow bullet
music video that played off of The Matrix.
Was that Falling Away From Me? Maybe. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
It was one of them, yeah. It's from the album Follow the Leader, but I don't remember the song title. But I'm pretty sure it had a lyric that went like this, Ross.
It was Freak on a Leash.
Freak on a Leash.
Freak
Thank
on a Leash
you.
Is the bullet video where it comes back and it's poking the holes and the lights are coming through. And man, nostalgia.
So, But yeah, so that scene stood out because it's like, It feels a little silly, and you do kind of have the reaction that now 20 years later, 22 years later, that you're like, so he just walking here and he's just like murdering like 70 just regular people.
Yeah, and like, and, I mean,
they kind of write it off. They set you up for it earlier in the film when Morpheus is like, when you're in the Matrix, anybody and everybody that's not us
is basically an agent. Yeah.
And so they're
susceptible to the agent immediately taking them over.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like, and you know that all these people are just like in their little energy pods or whatever, and that this isn't even a real life. So it's like,
right. So what the fuck?
You can kind of wipe it away, but it does stand out a little bit in the light of 2021. The opening of the film, where Trinity has to escape agents and police officers.
Yes.
That scene stood out to me as feeling very late 90s.
Yeah,
and I wasn't expecting it because the last time that I went back and watched The Matrix, it all still felt pretty fresh.
Right.
It's like the old model cop cars and like the soundstage that's like kind of Gotham-y, but you can kind of tell it's like a movie set.
It's very shadowy.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That all stood out to me as looking a little old school. I don't know what were some things that you pulled out from your rewatch.
I mean The biggest takeaway for me was definitely that I expected it to feel cheesier on the whole.
Yeah.
Like, I thought there would be more scenes where I was like, okay, this is absurd. Like, the scene where he goes in with the 40 guns and kills everyone. That scene still stood out as pretty over the top.
Yeah.
And just, like, they really went for it and, like I said, leaned in all the way. But when the movie was finished, like, the whole movie did not hit me that way. Like, it's not, it wasn't just like this awkward laugh fest. Like, I was like, God damn, this was really good. And it really did have a lot of references to a lot of, you know, life as a human and how complex it is, and how, I mean, how there are layers to reality and how reality is not always what it seems, and all these things that as a 13-year-old, I had no fucking clue what they were talking about, right?
Yeah, and that absolutely still stands out to me as well. And you know, the Wachowskis, I'm sure that they look back at it and can, like, kind of imbue their own personal lives and stories into the content that they were creating, right?
Right.
We can't take that away from them at all. But beyond that, this was kind of like one of the first times for you and I in our lifetimes where somebody did this kind of this magic trick of being like, what is all of this computer life? What does it all mean? What does it mean to be hooked into your job or your laptop or your phone or whatever? And like that it's exploring. It was just prescient that in 1999, they were envisioning this apocalyptic world where we're all just energy slaves.
Which is like, and you know, and coming now, closer every day.
Right. And Now, 22 years later, like Mark Zuckerberg wants you plugged into the metaverse so he can just feed you ads all day. And you're just an energy pod that is just like having all of your decisions, thoughts, and actions controlled by an entity,
if
a machine.
If the end game of your entire existence is that you feed money to giant corporations for them to operate,
yep,
then you are, by definition,
yeah,
the energy pod that we're displayed as in the Matrix. And it's like that whole concept, I mean, and really to your point, 22 years ago, we watched this movie and went, damn!
Yeah.
And now as 35-year-olds, we're like, oh, fuck. Because it's not so funny anymore. It's not anymore. Now it's like, oh, this is what's happening to us. And it was the first time, seriously, I think in my life, that the concept of reality came into question. Was questioned in a way that I could understand, where it was like, oh, shit. There might be more to this game than I previously acknowledged.
Yes.
Which is a thing that happens to us all in life, you know, hopefully several times. But this movie was, I mean, think about how many movies since then have hit on that subject.
Right.
You could argue Rick and Morty as a TV show's entire fucking plot is whether or not reality is real, right?
Sure.
So this movie and finding a way to go at that subject where the mainstream can enjoy it is difficult.
Well, and that's another big thing that I pulled out of this rewatch, and you kind of said it just a second ago when you said that, like, that you could grasp this. This was a way to, like, they questioned reality in a way that, like, made sense and was easy to pick up on. And this was the first time that I watched the movie where one of the things that really stood out to me was, and this is a total, I'm saying this as a total compliment, by the way, because it's basically what's torpedoed the other, the two sequels, and then I don't know about this new one, but
sure,
I've heard mixed reviews. This movie, The Matrix, is really simple and straightforward.
Yep.
One of the things that I noticed is just it has two, like, perfect act breaks where you're like, and scene. And you pause the show. This movie is 2 hours and 15 minutes long.
Okay.
Both of those come at 45 minutes and an hour and a half. It is, like, perfectly laid out into three separate acts that each have, like, the thing that's happening. It follows this really clean, tight story arc. And when you go back and you think about what they're telling you here, they do not overwhelm you with details.
Right.
They do not try to bring in...
They let you fill those gaps,
the architect.
Right?
Mm-hmm. They don't try to explain who or what the Oracle is. They don't even tell you really who these people are or where they came from. Like, you know, there's some backstory to how they got into the quote-unquote real world, right? And how they, like, are sourcing out other people that may want to join. But they don't elaborate. They don't try to... They just drop you in. They say, hey... Here's this Neo guy. He's probably the one because this group of people that lives in the real world thinks he's the one. And, like, everybody is just an energy pod plugged into the Matrix because the machines won the artificial intelligence machines won the war and destroyed the Earth. And your life is fake and everybody's life is fake. And that's
yes.
It.
And there's, like, this is the one group or of a maybe few groups of pirates who are, like, off trying to still fight the war so, like, humans can really live real lives in, like, the real world again or whatever the fuck.
Right.
But as a concept, it's straightforward. You're introduced to the characters very quickly.
Yep.
They're like, this is Neo. He's a hacker. Hey, look, these people are interested in Neo. And they want him to pick one of these pills so that they can either take him into the real world or he can go back to his shitty life as a fake pod person.
Yeah.
And he picks the real one, and then everything unfolds from there. And it's not that hard to understand what's happening. And they, you're right, they don't overwhelm you with crazy fucking detail that makes you go, what the fuck? I can't even understand what this... Like, movies don't do a good job with this anymore.
Even the way the agents are explained, the way that they are like computer systems, which is why they have to abide by rules because they literally are just a set of data.
Code,
right?
Yeah.
They're code. And that's what separates Neo from them is that he doesn't actually have to
follow
abide
the rules.
By any rules.
He can change things.
He can change things.
Yeah. So it's, sick when he finally does.
Yeah.
That, still sick.
That part 100% still hits just the same.
Dude, but that's the amazing thing about this movie. The fact that I was watching that scene and going, God damn, that's sick. I've seen it 10 times. Came out 22 years.
No.
He's just perfect, man.
Yeah.
Keanu's attitude, like his whole aura fits this character so perfectly. And then that's where he sits the rest of his career, in the Neo cool zone. Like the fucking... Don't try too hard, but also somehow you don't seem like you're trying hard enough.
Yeah.
He's that guy.
Thank God Will Smith didn't take this part, huh?
Oh, my God. I don't need any more Will Smith franchises, dude. I just don't. He's the opposite of Neo. I mean, the opposite of Keanu Reeves for me. Keanu Reeves goes on Fallon, right? And he does like two jokes that make you feel like maybe the world is worth saving. Will Smith goes on Fallon and reminds me that one of my favorite actors ever is a fucking psychopath.
Yeah.
And it's not the same experience. But yes, to your point, famously, Will Smith.
Yeah, and it was so
could
it was going to be
Neo.
It was I think original intention was to have the races reversed. So Neo was going to be Will Smith,
and
believe
Morpheus
was
going to be a white guy?
Yeah.
Wow.
Russell Crowe turned down Morpheus.
Okay. This would have been a totally different movie.
It would have been a totally different movie. And let's see, it also says Samuel L. Jackson and Gary Oldman were considered for the part.
Mm.
But the Lawrence Fishburne voice, like, is so essential to this movie. It's like, it's almost as essential as Keanu playing Neo.
You're right.
I mean, it was just, this movie wouldn't have been the same had it been cast differently. They made the right decisions. We're glad that those other actors, great in their own rights, turned these roles down because it gave us this classic.
Dude, do you want some...
I just loved how straightforward this was. I was like, you know, because we think about it as this really high-minded movie, and it was, because the concept was so kind of groundbreaking and interesting for the time.
Right.
And then you go back and you compare it to all the puzzle box shit that we watch now, and I'm so grateful that they made it very, you know, relatively clear and easy to understand this two-hour movie.
Didn't try too hard. Okay, so here's the who became Neo story. Will Smith turned down the role of Neo to make Wild Wild West, probably the worst decision in the history of Hollywood, because skepticism over the film's ambitious bullet time special effects impacted him. Basically, he was like, nah, they can't pull it. Him and his agent were like, nah, they can't pull it off. So we're going to go make Wild Wild West with a robot spider.
What we trust instead is the animatronic robot spider.
You know what it was, right? The Wachowskis were like, no, Will Smith, you cannot make the theme song. And then the dickhead who did Wild Wild West was like, we'll let you make every song. We don't give a shit. And he was trying to be music rapper guy at that point still.
Yeah, yeah.
He hadn't totally sold to that. So anyway, so Will Smith later stated he was not, quote, mature enough as an actor, end quote, at that time. And that if given the role, he would have messed it up. Nick Cage turned it down because of family obligations. Warner Brothers went after Brad Pitt and Val Kilmer. Both declined. Leonardo DiCaprio originally accepted, then turned it down because he didn't want to do a visual effects film directly after Titanic.
Holy shit.
So they pushed for Reeves, who won the role over Johnny Depp. So basically every A-lister was up for this role, and fucking Keanu walked away with it. That's Hollywood man.
I could be wrong then about the lead up to this film. Maybe it was a little bit bigger budget, bigger hype than I personally remember, but it was a rated R film, right?
Yeah,
that was a piece of it, you know. Like we don't get a lot of stuff that's like, you think about the history of like your giant summer blockbusters, they're not R rated, they're PG-13s.
Sure.
And so this definitely was a little bit more. It was in a different. It was more niche. That's for sure.
I mean, look,
But that's an amazing list of actors that were considered for the role.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Sci-fi movies in and of by themselves, sci-fi movies, when you think of the most successful sci-fi movie ever, it's probably Star Wars, right? Like, this was not Star Wars.
No.
And in no way could it be marketed on an even same realm,
right,
playing field, whatever. It was weird. It was dark. It was a little bit more niche. And like, you kind of had to, I mean, at that point in 1999, open-mindedness wasn't exactly the hottest thing around. Like, that was again, so this was mostly, it was like the early success of it was most badass action movie ever made, right?
Right.
The long-term critical success has been, oh, this film says so much about life in the world and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, in 1999, I was open to watching Fred Durst perform Nookie on MTV Spring Break.
I was right. Yeah, you and I were in the same spot.
That's what I was open-minded about.
That's exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I knew nothing of the world or anything about life. Like, literally nothing at all, looking back. And yet but that's what was so great about The Matrix is even as a kid, it got you to think like, okay, there's something to this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it is.
My head is wrapped around it. Yeah, yeah.
They're fucking with big picture ideas, and which makes me feel smart and cool. And there's badass like graphics or whatever. Yeah.
It's a good segue to my next point or my next thing that I picked up on. 1999, late 90s. This movie reminds me a lot, or is connected to me to Swordfish.
Okay.
Quite a bit.
Okay, John Travolta.
And John Travolta's Swordfish, and with Hugh Jackman,
more hacking
breakout role.
Yeah,
exactly. We loved Hackers in the 90s and the early 2000s. Man, Hackers were the hottest thing going. There was nothing.
God, you're right. Hugh Jackman was in that.
Yeah, nothing hotter and sexier and cooler. Keyword cooler. Than being a hacker in the 90s.
Because you weren't
so many
against
movies
the man,
about hacking.
And you had power on the internet. And that was tight. It still kind of is.
State of the Enemy of the State, a movie that Will Smith did make. That's got a lot of hacking going on.
You know what?
I think there was a movie called Hackers. Brad Pitt, I think, plays some hacker stuff in either Sleepers or 13 Monkeys, something like that.
Sure.
There were just hackers all over the place.
When I
man.
Think of Swordfish, I think of titties.
Yeah, Halle Berry's.
I mean, that was the movie when Halle Berry took her titties out,
yeah,
and everybody lost their fucking mind, and it was probably the single most marketable set that's ever been displayed. Think about it. That whole movie, nobody was like, what's Swordfish about? They were just like, have you heard Swordfish has Halle Berry's titties in it? And then everybody went and saw the movie.
That just unbelievable, like, just, you know, shift, paradigm shift of the landscape. Can you imagine now, full-scale internet? Halle Berry bearing breast literally got people to go to the movie theater, Ross.
Yes. Yes, it was a totally different world.
It was just a wild, yeah.
That was 2001, bro.
2001, Swordfish.
20 years now, titties won't even get me off the couch.
That's because you got a billion titties in the pocket of your pants.
Exactly. Exactly. There's titties everywhere. Whereas in 99, you had to go to the movie theater if you wanted to see Halle Berry's titties. Totally different planet. But the point is, it was like, look, and again, I bet you if you go back and watch a lot of these other movies that stood out from this time frame, they suck ass. The Matrix did not suck ass because it was sort of the gold standard for not overdoing it, not making it so technical in the end that nobody can really even enjoy it because...
Right.
Who the hell wants to sit there like, I mean, just full nerd. You can't go full nerd. You've got to reel it in for the dumbasses and the regular people like us.
My last note on The Matrix, also great style. And you look back at the style, the real world, the ship style.
Mm-hmm.
Lot of like Yeezy style layering and drab colorways and torn up open knit sweaters and stuff like that.
It's that cyberpunk like...
The big boots, very... Yeah,
the boots especially, dude.
Shouts to Carrie-Anne Moss. Looks great in a pair of leather pants.
Ooh, my God. And look, as a 13-year-old who was erect most of the time, that was a big part of this, too.
That's why you want The Matrix 5 to be titled The Matrix 5 Erections.
Erections, even though there's no R.
Apostrophe, erections.
Okay, there was something else. The kung fu side of this cannot be ignored, which was a huge thing.
I know kung fu.
God, it's a great line. A huge thing with this movie, though, is that they were like, this is the best technical kung fu, like, hand-to-hand combat movie ever made at that point or whatever. And they were heavily inspired by Japanese anime and martial arts films. And They had fight choreographers and wire fu techniques and Hong Kong action cinema influence, which was all new for
right.
for big budget Hollywood, mainstream Hollywood. This was like, well, and then that's where 30 movies have come
from. I
think
those pieces are really like the types of things that the Wachowskis specialized in. It's like
yes.
bringing those kind of
elements, yeah.
Those concepts that hadn't been in mainstream film that are kind of niche in and of themselves.
Yes.
They would bring that kind of weird stuff into play.
And last thing I'll say about The Matrix, look, when you do this type of movie and when you bring all those strange elements, and it can be very easy, especially with age, 20 years passing, for it to not hit correctly. Like stylistically, a lot of movies, if you went after this, you'd go back and watch, and just how goofy everyone looked by itself
right.
would ruin the movie for yep. you. That's not what happens with this one. It's like there are parts for sure where I'm like, okay, that outfit is just the silliest thing I have ever seen. But most of the movie, you're just like, these people are cool badass hackers
yep.
and wear really sleek black clothes and huge fucking boots all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just fine. By the way, if you want the full list of names that were almost attached to The Matrix, you have to go to their Wikipedia and it would take us another 45 minutes. But you hit probably 7 of them off the top of your head, which is crazy to me. But there's like 24 more.
Yeah.
Like it's fucking nuts, but we don't have to do that right now.
Cypher, Ralphie, that final thing.
Oh, God, yeah. So you and I have been,
again. This predated his run on The Sopranos, which
yes.
that part makes sense because he does look younger and cooler in this movie.
Yes. Barrett and I, again, watching The Sopranos on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, and the dude who plays Cypher, whose name is Joe Pantoliano, became famous because of The Matrix.
Yeah.
Like he is not, I guess, the big bad, but he's the bad guy. I mean,
yeah, he's the villain.
He's the bad guy. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
He's the guy who gives you the most.
He's the human villain.
Bad guy vibes. Right.
Right. He's
the only human villain, really, that's worthy of putting that label on. And then in the Sopranos, he comes in. Obviously, in this movie, he's completely bald. Right.
Right. Yeah. Crumbed
up. And then in the Sopranos, the whole time he's got these goofy ass hair pieces on that Barrett and I could not stop commenting on because we knew
yeah.
his head was shaved because of The Matrix. And then he hit The Sopranos immediately. And I don't think he ever did anything after that. It was like one of the biggest movies of all time, one of the biggest TV shows of all time. And then he just quit.
And then he just
honestly,
retired.
What a way to go about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So The Matrix Erections coming 2023, I've heard.
Okay.
But you can watch. Which one is it now? Revolutions?
The second and the third sequels.
Resurrections is out now.
And then the fourth one are all on HBO Max.
Okay.
And I've not seen them. I'm not sure that maybe I'll try to give this new one a shake.
I feel like I'm going to skip 2 and 3 and watch
yeah,
the new one.
No, 2 and 3 are not good films.
I know the third one was absolute trash.
Like I don't even think I saw the third one.
Oh, you know what? My dad just watched the second one. He texted me yesterday and he said, yep, that was a cash grab.
Yeah.
So, again, the first one is so good because it's got the Wachowskis' whole vision in it.
Yep.
And then, like we've seen with many TV shows especially, you hit a home run and they want another home run.
Yeah.
But you don't have the stuff, so you just crank out the money grab
yeah.
shit.
You create a 30-minute monologue about the architect and it makes no fucking sense.
And then everybody wants yeah. to stab their eyes out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what happened with 2 and 3. So maybe we just jump to 4.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I think we should be able to talk about it some. Right?
Yeah.
Especially after we spent this much time on 1999's The Matrix.
Well, you know, people love The Matrix.
I have a question. Do you think there's anybody out there? So this is a totally new generation of kids and you know, and Gen Z Zoomers or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going back and watching the OG shit and then going and watching the new one? Or do they just completely stay out of this? If you're young, I'd love to hear from you. From like, you know, if you're 18 to 25 right now, do you have any interest in The Matrix at all? Do y'all even talk about it? Is this a film you're going to go see, or is it just interesting to people like Barrett and I who are around for the OG?
Yeah.
Because it's such a cult classic, The Matrix, that I'm not sure if it's busted through that, and now it's like must watch
I'm
or whatever.
I'm trying to do a decent comparison. I'm trying to think about anything that maybe could relate to us. I think that when we were, let's say, 20, I had gone back and watched movies like Terminator and Terminator 2.
That's true.
So surely, which are from the 80s.
This has to fit into that slot, right?
You'd probably have seen like Rocky.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that The Matrix is probably a movie that that is being watched as a classic.
And it's on TV a lot.
It's on TV
right?
a lot, yes.
Or at least it was before streaming wars. Now they probably don't allow it to be on TV.
It still hangs around. That's, yeah.
Television is so weird. I've been watching more TV lately, and I'm like, what are y'all doing over here, man? Because the rest of us have stopped paying attention. ESPN runs like this. They just run the same show over and over.
Ross, you know, I was at home for like 9 days. You know, we had the week off between Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, had big chilling time. And this is like a whole nother segment, so I'm not gonna talk your ear off about it. But I got sucked down the wormhole of
what?
The Game Show Network.
Wow.
Which is genius in its own right. And the one thing I'll say about it, the unbelievable thing that they do. Commercials only happen on the Game Show Network, like right in the middle of a 30-minute game show.
So that you have to
once
come back.
Once an episode of my new favorite, America Says, ends,
okay.
The next one starts immediately, and they are playing the game within like 30 seconds. So like they keep you on the hamster wheel.
You're hooked in.
Like nothing I have ever seen before. And I'm just sitting there watching like 6 episodes of America Says, 4 episodes of Family Feud. I can't help myself. I can't stop it. And
where do you find the Game Show Network?
YouTube TV has it, man.
Oh fuck, that's not good. Because I switched. You were my last straw. Where I was like, well, that's actually not true. Google called me and said, hey,
please switch.
You don't
to
have
YouTube
TV anymore, but we do have YouTube TV.
Yeah,
would you like that? And I was like, okay. So I got that now, and it's taken me 2 months to cancel all the other bullshit I was paying for that's actually now on this YouTube thing.
Well, don't even get yourself started on the Game Show Network.
Not going to even look for it, because that could be the end for me. What other game shows are on there, though? Like The Price is Right? Wheel of Fortune?
No, those still have their own homes on network.
So this is just lesser knowns?
Yeah.
It's
Family Feud is their crown jewel, I believe.
Wow.
But then there's this one that I discovered, which is a lot like Family Feud, called America Says, and it's hosted by John Michael Higgins.
America Says? What the fuck is going on over there?
And it's, dude, it's... It is like crack, yeah.
Game Show Network, founded in 1994, owned by Sony. That is some shit. That is some shit. All right, well, let's move on. Today's episode also brought to you by Bird Dogs, making the most comfortable shorts in the world with built-in underwear you know and love for living life and making love. Like, why wear shorts with underwear when you can wear even better shorts with the underwear built in, thus creating less laundry, thus saving the planet like Leonardo DiCaprio, thus making you a hero who is also better looking and more comfortable. Bird Dogs, you silly bastard. But did you know they make pants as well for these winter months? Pants for work, pants for play, pants for golf. And I am wearing right now as we speak a pair of their new joggers, the Bird Dogs joggers, which are next level comfortable. They're incredible. Grab yourself a pair. And what's
Bird
more,
Dogs.
For listening here and being a part of the Clam Fam, when you use code OCC at checkout, you get a free whistling football, like that Nerf football you grew up with, but it's a Bird Dog's whistling football. When you throw it through the air, it makes a whistling noise, like, or whatever. So, this holiday season into 2022, all year long, use the code OCC when you check out on birddogs.com. Get yourself a pair of the most comfortable pants or shorts or joggers in the world with the underwear built in, or not, if you don't want to be a rebel. Code OCC to support the podcast. Free whistling football. Birddogs.com.
Also the noise that you make to summon Rufio, I believe.
Rufio. The Great. Let's talk about The Great a little,
shall we? Wrapped up The Great.
Season 2.
I watched the finale of season 2 last night.
Thoughts and feelings?
Really, very good. Good stuff.
Sophomore season.
You know, last week I talked about how I thought that this season missed Leo a little bit, just as like the emotional grounding of the show.
Yeah, so what'd you think when it was all said and done?
I thought that the back half of this season was better than the first half.
Agreed.
And especially once Paul, the child, by the spoilers are coming for season 2 of The Great, so if you've not watched, please go check it out.
The Great is incredible.
Great.
It's on Hulu.
But once Paul is there, he kind of fills that gap, that emotional weight, which actually ends up tying the two characters, Nicholas, that played by Nicholas Hoult and Elle Fanning, Catherine and Peter, together, even closer than they've ever been.
Right.
And so I thought that kind of...
Did you see that turn coming?
That raised the stakes a little bit. No, not really.
Neither did I. I was surprised they chose this route, and then I was happy with it, too.
Yeah, and as was I, which makes the finale, you know, they really manipulate your emotions.
Ooh.
There. It's very bittersweet, right? Because they kind of trick us into rooting for these two together.
Yeah.
We like it. It feels good, man.
It's weird, though. It's like a guilty pl- like, I'm like, yeah. I'm like, I know this is bad, but yeah. I, for some reason, I want it for both of you.
And so at the end, there's really like, you know, I sorry to continue referencing The Sopranos, but we're five seasons deep, and I can't help myself because
this is what happens.
That's what it does.
Yeah.
But the Sopranos, like, never says this on the surface, but continually is being referential about how it is a TV show and the fact that its characters can't really change. Otherwise, there is no TV show anymore.
Right.
And that's like an inherent quality of almost all television shows and television characters, is that if you start making them change, if you fix all their problems, if they become better people, then the show is over.
Right.
And so at the end of this, as bittersweet as it was, when Catherine full on attempts to murder Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter has his entire legion with guns under the table ready to kill her. It's kind of like that. It's bittersweet, but you know it kind of has to happen because
was always coming.
The core of the show is the tension between them. And if they just end up together in love and it's happy, then there's no reason to watch the show anymore. It's not the
same problem Succession keeps having, right? Where we're like, okay, so if Brian Cox dies or loses, the show's over.
Yeah.
Because yeah. Nobody wants to watch these three morons quibble over the company that he is very clearly in charge of and yeah. after season three's finale, we know these kids never had a shot in hell. They were never close. And this old man, as they say, you know, what's he say? Toy fucking soldiers. You've all just been playing toy fucking soldiers.
Nosy pedestrians.
Nosy fucking pedestrians. It's kind of the same deal.
So, right. It was kind of like you kind of knew that they had to hit the reset button a little bit.
To be able to maintain momentum, yeah.
To go into season three with more story to plumb and more more story to tell.
Rest in peace to Pugachev, by the way. Pugachev.
Well, he hops right up.
He's fine.
Well, there's two things.
Yeah, I'm still not sure
that the finale does not explain that they leave as little cliffhangers. One, Pugachev pops up and walks out of the room with about 9 stab wounds in his back. So we don't know. We don't know if that's like a reference to like that he's just the best lookalike because he's very hard to kill, or if Peter kind of knew that this was a thing that might happen, so we had him wearing some like padding,
Kevlar
or
in the back,
vest
or
something like that,
huh?
Or what?
Obviously,
and then
a confusing
moment. The other big kind of shoe that dropped was that Mariel is in the party that is arrested,
right?
Which I thought. What? How'd you feel about that? What was your kind of?
She's been back and forth the whole series, right? So it's like Mariel reminds me a lot of like Jerry on Succession, where it's like she's always going to do what she has to do for Jerry at the end of the day.
Yeah,
you really like her, you root for her, you hope she'll be a good guy with your good characters and Catherine's team, but at the same time, she's got her own set of needs and her twisted relationship with the priest, and it's a complicated. I mean, at one point in the season, her fucking like nephew shows up and is suddenly like the guy she ends up deciding, oh, I'm going to marry this little kid to stay at court.
Her 8-year-old nephew.
The whole thing is just, I mean, it got to the point where I kind of half expected her to fall back onto the wrong side of things.
Well, it's right. So I think that we never get confirmation, but I think it definitely suggests that Catherine is aware she is having a relationship with Grigor.
Right.
Right. Like we don't see her, Catherine, find out about that. We don't see anybody tell her about that. But that, it seems clear. And then we go back to the end of season one, where Mariel also kind of betrayed Catherine.
Yeah.
Did betray her.
Yeah, full blown.
But also did save her life, likely.
An excused betrayal
so
of sorts.
So I think that's kind of, that's where my mind went, is that, do I think Mariel is going to be, you know, in prison with Arcady and whoever else all of season three? No, I think that she'll worm her way out of there because she's a good player of the game.
They've invested in her a lot too.
They've invested in her a lot, but I think that this was kind of maybe even a message from Catherine that like there was also the element that like I thought there was a little kill the messenger type thing in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like you decided to fuck this up, you couldn't keep your mouth shut, and just like Grigor tells Mariel, like, if you don't say anything, this is all fun and games. We're all living happily.
Right.
Like there was a lot like Peter regretting, you know, having the regret about telling Elizabeth that his mom drowned her son. There was no reason to bring that up. Nobody needed to know that. And that was the same thing here, right? Like, not really any good could come from her dropping that bombshell. She just couldn't contain herself.
Yeah.
And so I thought there was a little bit maybe of like kind of spite from that angle as well.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So it was complicated.
It just all built up to, but it was a surprising moment nonetheless.
What did you think of Gillian Anderson, whatever his performance?
Love Gillian Anderson's performance
and the way she went out.
She, you know, she got in for two quick episodes, did her thing, and then fell out a window.
Did you know it was going to be that quick? Because I mean, when she came in and they start parading her around as like basically the main character for two episodes, I was like, God damn, they're really, really, really going. And first of all, totally unexpected. I thought her mom would come in and be like this loving, supportive, very sweet mother.
Yeah.
And then what you get is very much the opposite. She's pretty cold, calculated. I mean, she literally fucks her husband. Her daughter's husband, the king. And it seems like at the end of the day, her own ambitions are really the only thing that matters. As things are starting to sort of unravel with Peter having to try to resist her while also trying to woo his with Catherine back to him while also she's about to give birth to their son. And it obviously the climax being when she is fucked out of the window and dies. I was shocked. Like, I did not see that moment coming. I did see the moment they have sex coming, obviously. Yeah, yeah, like, they just kept, you know, it's Gillian Anderson. You're not going to say no to that.
Yeah, he was eventually going to break. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but when they're having sex, and I'm like, okay, so from here, obviously, we can see how this goes. They're both going to have to keep it a secret. This whole thing could unravel. And they do go that similar route, but with her dead. And with Peter having to, like, the episodes where he's desperately trying to keep himself from telling her were very, very, very funny to me. Even in the midst of them being wrapped up in things like them going to make sure Elizabeth didn't kill their child, right? That she has very recently stolen. There was so much that happened in this season. And for what started, it did start, like you said, in a place where I was like, okay, we got a little sophomore season shit bubbling up. Like, where's the damn emotion that I had in season one.
Right.
Where's my reason for caring as much as I did in season one?
Yeah.
And they end up, it's not the same, right? Not the same kind of care, but they do end up getting me back to a place where I'm as emotionally invested by the end of the season where all hell breaks loose. And we now are looking forward to season three to know what's going to happen next, right?
Yeah. And another good thing that they kind of laid the foundation for is this idea that, and you mentioned it with Catherine's mom, that she's very, very much like has her vision for the way that things should be. And that is how they should be, how they need to be. And I am going to accomplish
them by
any means necessary.
Yeah.
We see the same type of, thought process with Catherine trying to run the country.
Yes.
She's very idealistic and romantic about people and about her vision and about the way that things, you know, should underline be even when they're not. And so some realization that is going to have to change with accepting Velimentov, wanting to go to war, and Orlov for, you know, needing to send money back to his family and that region. And like, basically, like, that should be good going into season three as those people become less of her pawns and puppets and more actual
partners, almost,
partners
or whatever,
and aides to the way that she wants to govern. But yeah, I thought the season closed out really strongly. The final scene there where she does stab Pugachev and then is immediately overwhelmed with emotion and grief about
thinking
it.
Thinking
that she's killed Peter, and then he's right there and she's
confused
but thrilled, and he knows that she just tried to kill him, basically. Like, it's a great little setup. It was really
they're back and forth well
concocted, and yeah,
the way they've structured it is like, because okay, that's the thing. Beginning of season two, you're like, well, how is this gonna work? She's in charge now. He's a prisoner, but he's not a prisoner, and he can kind of do whatever he wants. But also, is he in love with her? And then is she going to fall in love with him? And like, what? And it's just this, the way that all unfolds through the course of the season is incredible. And it is a lot of the time. Look, having been the one of the two of us that's been married, and it gone horribly wrong. this is sort of the inside game with being married. Like, there's this game within the game almost that's can you get each other to do what you want? It is a manipulation, like, in a way. It's like, can I get this person who I've committed to or who I'm stuck with, right, is the way that a lot of people have to look at it, unfortunately. And in this case, an arranged royal marriage, certainly that is the case. There's this level to it that is a little manipulative and a little bit that can be misleading or whatever in terms of trying to get what you want as a person.
Right.
And that's what we see play out with Catherine and Peter so well on many different layers. Cause, like, you know, I love this. I love the part of one of my favorite parts of the season is when Peter decides, I don't want to be king.
Yeah.
He's like, I never wanted this. I was born into it. People told me I had to have it. They forced me into it. Why the fuck can't I just run around being rich, handsome, and do whatever I want all the time?
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, Peter is maybe the most likable sociopathic character ever put on screen.
I think so. And that's a huge credit to Nicholas Hoult, who just absolutely crushes this role.
I'm serious. Like, he's one of the worst people ever put on a television show and one of the most likable, which doesn't make sense at all. But every time I watch him do something horrendous, I'm like, that's pretty cute or funny as hell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The dude's awesome. And he's playing his double, right?
Yes, he is. I had to, I was.
There were points where I was like, is that him?
Yeah.
He's so good with his, something with his face they're jacking with.
The teeth and the little, and like they give him like some freckles and they definitely mess with it a little bit. But the prosthetics and the makeup were so good that I was like, did they seriously just find a guy with the exact same like bone structure and eyes as Nicholas Hoult?
Which reminds me of.
Did they do that?
In the Prestige.
He's playing Pugachev as well.
In the Prestige, Hugh Jackman plays bootleg Hugh Jackman. Where they're like, we got to find another magician who looks like you, and then they're like, it's you. Hugh plays that guy too, and it's like a drunken, half their version of the full blown character. It's just interesting. This is the exact same thing they did here, but it's hilarious and I love it.
Yeah,
Pugachev, glad he's alive. That sort of slipped out of my brain the second that he got up and walked off. That's it for the great in terms of notes that I have.
Yeah, it's not yet been renewed for season 3. I'm not sure. It probably just a timing thing for Hulu. It's probably just they have a moment when they announce what shows have been renewed and
what they've got coming up. Yeah.
I don't know if they're waiting for Emmy nominations to come out or what how the decision making process goes. With that, I can't imagine the show not coming back for season 3.
That'd be shocking.
I think it's relatively popular, and the people that are watching it, this is also always a huge piece in our streaming era. It's like, if the people that are watching it really, really love it and are talking about it and tweeting about it and posting about it and doing all that stuff, then it's like that weighs as much as several million people casually watching it.
Yes.
Right. So it's like, I think it's safe, but I'm gonna be really, really bummed if this does not get picked back up for
This is an example of one that would be like, that would be an all time blunder.
Yeah.
Like, if they drop this show, they have severely fucked up. They need to cancel everything else on their network in order to keep this if that was how it went down.
Hopefully they're not, just clearing the slate for their new Kardashian show.
God, please no. And basically based off what I'm reading, it could be anywhere between like November 2022 to February 2023. But when we get the renewal announcement, which we all are assuming is coming at some point, within a year of that, is the general rule of thumb, according to the internet.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Anything else you've been watching that you wanted to touch on?
I wanted to just quickly touch on an HBO Max show called Station 11.
Station 11.
There are 7 episodes out right now. It's doing that kind of Hulu-esque drop model, which is like, I think they started with 3 and then did 2 and then 2 more.
And I still like this.
I like it too. And I don't know if 8, 9, and 10, I don't know if they'll do 8 and 9 and then 10, or if it'll be 8, 9, 10 altogether this Thursday. It's a pandemic show, which is based on a book. So this is not, it was not inspired by COVID. It just happens to carry some very
COVID-y.
close to home realities.
2014, the novel, right? Came out?
That's right. And it's got a lot of Lost to it in the way that it bounces between timelines, and there's like some prophecy things going on, and there's a little bit of mystery.
Okay.
But it is very, very, very character focused. So it's not it's not dragging you along without a direction. It is a mini series. This is based on a book. I do not expect any subsequent seasons here, so I think this thing will be wrapped up relatively neatly.
So not necessarily a huge investment.
Of course, you never know. And it's just really, really, really well done. Phenomenal performances all around. And if you're looking for something that's like very, very heartfelt and very character driven, but carries that element of mystery and kind of suspense and like, what is going on here? Is there something bigger happening?
The spirituality.
Then it's kind of got all of that. And it's really just like, it's cool because every episode is kind of like a little different.
Okay.
You know, like just as far as who the character focus is, where it is, which timeline it's in. And this is taking place between like the very beginning of the pandemic, which is considered day zero. And this particular virus flu just essentially killed everybody. It was
right.
An apocalyptic event, not a,
not pandemic.
What we're currently experiencing, not a pandemic to endemic. And so it's, of course, the stakes are far higher.
Yeah.
But yeah, really, really good performances and a fun show to tide you over before things like Euphoria.
It's coming, baby.
Comes back this Sunday. Righteous Gemstones comes back in a couple of weeks.
Dude, that they did one of their classic HBO, you know, hey, other networks, try to make one of these. And that's just a trailer of a minute and a half of like every show that's going to win Emmys this year on HBO. And you're just like, oh, shit, they really do have a lot of properties. I mean, look, we've talked ad nauseum. Netflix is spending so much money making show after show after show after show after show after show. We always wondered, like, would HBO, how would they keep up with this model? They've found their lane, which is HBO Max, which is where they can pump in all this other content to kind of fill the gaps, right?
Yep.
And then they can stick to their formula, which is like find brands, shows, whatever, that are going to have potential and invest in them and then give them the room to kind of grow. And HBO's never been focused so much on the numbers game. Well, you know, when you hit a home run with Game of Thrones, you got to do what you got to do. But like with Euphoria as an example, man, there aren't even many people who can handle that fucking show. But the people that are watching it, no, it's one of the best things they've ever seen.
I got to go watch the Rue and the Jules.
I still haven't watched those.
Now, I guess.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
You do.
So.
Or else, you know, you can't be hanging around here no more, Rue.
I saw a trailer for this new Euphoria, and it looks like Rue's back off the wagon, which I hate to see. But...
Fuck. It's going to be so hard to watch.
But again, like we just talked about, you got to, with these shows, man, that's part of it. You got to hit reset. Like, you can't have people fixing their lives and making all the right changes and doing all the right things. Otherwise, there's not good TV on. So we just, you know.
Nobody wants to see that shit.
Hate to see it for Rue, but looking forward to what that shit show brings.
And you know what? If you're not a Euphoria person, if you're like, I can't do the Zoomers, I can't, fine. Go watch Dope Sick. That's your depressing lesson learning show to watch for you. Dope Sick on Hulu, which is also incredible. And I just can't watch it yet. But I keep, every week, another person, Jared, being the most recent one, Jared doesn't even watch stuff. He's a documentary guy. He watches docs. He watches Dope Sick and fucking loves it. And I've seen more and more love on Twitter. But again, it's a show about the opioid crisis. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know where happy shows go, where they went. Did they exist ever?
It's a good question, though, because we briefly touched on YouTube TV. Like, my nighttime stuff is just putting on The Office on Comedy Central or whatever again.
I just am What We Do in the Shadows over and over.
And I don't have a... I'm lacking my 30-minute Chaser show right now that is not just like another rerun of something I've already seen.
And a lot of the stuff I'm watching is heavy as fuck, and I need that Chaser more than ever.
Yeah, like, yes. Totally. Absolutely.
Like, I want to watch... What is the name of this pandemic show you just watched?
Station 11.
I think I'm going to start.
On this one.
And I'm going to need some humor. The only other move I have to suggest for anyone out there listening who's like, I'm in the same boat. God damn it. Give us Chasers. I go to the Disney Plus app and I throw on one of the stupid cartoons they fed us when we were children with all these nonsensical, you know, things that don't actually exist in the real world.
Like Bambi? No,
fuck that. No, not like Bambi, like Great Mouse Detective.
Okay.
Or like Aladdin or like, you know, one of the not so shitty ones.
Okay.
Almost all of which now start with a very long 3-paragraph warning about being racially or sexually insensitive to pretty much everyone that's not
straight
and
white. Well,
there's
a new one. There's Encanto. Have you... New Disney movie, I think.
Encanto.
Disney Plus thing.
I'll try to get on that.
Not sure.
Yeah. Disney's doing a good job of making up for several generations of a total lack of diversity.
Yeah, yeah.
In the 2020s.
But that's definitely one thing that ClamFam on the tweet box or in the Discord. Give me your.
I'm not on Twitter anymore, dude. I'm on Gitter.
Gitter.
Yeah.
Give me the.
Rogan told me to go there.
Is that for real? Is there?
I'm not joking. Oh, that's God. A real thing he's doing. Yeah, Gitter. Gettr. Do not download it. Stop. If you're listening right now, it's not real.
But get at me and tell me. Give me a 30-minute show, a sitcom that I missed, that I should have, that I need. Like, I don't know. With it, pitch me on New Girl or something. You know, something in that type of vein.
Okay.
Because I've seen all of How I Met Your Mother, all the big ones: 30 Rock, Seinfeld, Office, Friends, Arrested Development, Parks and Rec, Community. Done all those.
Have you done What We Do in the Shadows?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, okay. I'm mad done with What We Do in the Shadows.
Fuck. Yeah. It's
so yeah. I'm.
Where's the next one?
Yeah. What's the next one?
Because it's not Dope Sick.
It's definitely not Dope Sick.
I tried it. The first.
And it's not
episode.
Scrubs. I couldn't get back into Scrubs.
I can't either. I honestly couldn't even get into Scrubs when Scrubs was Scrubs. I would do the random episodes, but I couldn't. It was never one of my binge shows because two plus Scrubs back to back to back, I start to want to punch everyone in the face on the show.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep.
For some reason. So, yeah, Barrett and I'll be back next week. Holler at Barrett on social media, at Barrett Dudley on Twitter and Instagram. I am at WR Bolin on Twitter and Instagram. Let us know what you're watching, what chaser we could possibly utilize to make it through this first month of 2022, a new year, where we appreciate all of you being here. And if you want to watch The Sopranos with us, it doesn't matter if you've ever seen it before, if you got halfway through season 3 and then you quit 10 years ago, Barrett and I are doing a podcast, a companion podcast for every single episode of The Sopranos on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. That if you sign up right now, you'll not only be supporting our show, but you'll get access to our entire backlog, starting with season 1, episode 1's companion podcast, all the way up through season 5, episode 2? 3?
I think we're on 3 this week.
3 this week? Season 5.
It's which not 4, is it? It's not
no,
episode 4, is
no,
it?
No, it's definitely 4. Oh.
Are we on 3 or 4 this week? I'm not sure. One or the other.
I think 3, but it doesn't really matter. You'll find out when you go sign up on Supreme. I think it's 4. Yeah, 4. Episode 4. The Sopranos, Season 5, Episode 4, this week with Barrett 9, patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. But the second you sign up, you get the entire backlog as we work our way through 5 and Season 6 A and B over the next few months. Hop in now. Get on the Sopranos train with us and enjoy. We will be back next week. Until our next helping, goodbye.